It's been another 2 weeks in the MLS, and the boys are back to talk a little soccer. Biz, how are you doing for episode 6 of the Something About Soccer podcast? You excited to get into it?
I'm ready. It's funny how 2 weeks can really change your mood on just your own personal team and how results go. I think last time we signed on, I was really feeling some of the dropped results that we had and kind of pissed away some of the leads. And now all of a sudden it's 2 wins in a row.
Must be nice.
I did also swap in some terrible weather for the first game that I witnessed in that in person. But outside of that, 6 points through two, and all of a sudden the Loons are riding high in third place in the West right now. So I'm feeling great.
All right, cool. I don't want to hear about your team doing good. Picks, how are you doing today? And your Red Bulls?
I can't complain too much. Oh. I think we're still struggling a little bit, especially with us getting to the final last year. I think that, you know, we expect a little bit more, but with the amount of changes that we've had among, you know, our squad, with some of the teams that some of the players that we've brought in and out, I think we're kind of performing to the expectations. I think we deserve a little bit more, and I think that we need to find a little bit more out the players. But I don't know. I feel like I'm very reactionary during the games a lot of the times. But overall, looking into it and actually, you know, taking it with a grain of salt, I think that there is things to look out for. So I'm hopeful, but I'm still, you know, demanding more of the organization overall.
Well, I'm happy for you when I hear that. Thanks. I'm really happy for the hope you guys have.
What about you, Dill?
The nil-nil against Tigres was awesome in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That was fun. But the two MLS results for the Galaxy, a 2-1 loss to Orlando City and a 2-0 loss to Real Salt Lake. Two of, I would say, some of the... Okay, Orlando City's been good in their last five, so I can't get down on them too bad. And we talked about them pretty extensively, actually, in the last episode in terms of their new right wing, the replacement for Facundo Torres, really linking up with Luis Muriel, but just getting absolutely Diego Luna'd yesterday.
It's a verb.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. We are the last place team. Yeah, we are completely the last place team.
I saw that in the Supporter Shield too. I was like,
Montreal have one more better goal difference than us, but the Galaxy, my team, my lovely, lovely Galaxy, injured, battered, losing our midfielders, watching the watch party with Brugman out there on a different team made me miss him. Speaking about that watch party, watching Walker Zimmering get absolutely judo kicked by your boy, your boy Vargas. You claimed him before the game, and then that was bad. That was bad. We're glad he's okay. I joke now because, you know.
Yeah, we should specify. He is out of the hospital. He was actually out of the hospital same day, which is kind of incredible, to be honest. But happy to hear he is.
Yeah. Well, let's get off the sad topics like the Galaxy and Zimmerman's, you know.
Face.
And let's get into the episode proper. So we spoke a little bit, you know, about our three teams. Biz's Minnesota. Tanny, 3 goals in the last 2 games. Really awesome to see. And then Red Bulls. Well, I'll be speaking about them a little bit at the top of our, week six and week seven update. But one thing we really wanted to talk about in this intro before we get into, you know, the past 2 weeks of games is a little bit more U.S. men's national team roster talk, because we spoke about it a lot 2 weeks ago, because that was coming off the U.S. men's national team's disappointing losses to both Panama and Canada in the semifinal and third place game. But one thing I've been thinking about a lot and just watching a lot of these MLS games is the goalkeeper position. We've talked about it on the watch party. I think we've all had these thoughts, you know, by ourselves as well, just watching Matt Turner, and a guy that has been our out-and-out number one for a fair number of years now, was really, really good in the MLS, made a move to Arsenal where he was a backup, and honestly developed pretty well under Arteta, became a little bit better on his feet. You know, you would never say his strength is his feet, being a sweeper keeper, being a guy who can play out the back, but he definitely got better. And some would say that he wasn't the best at Arsenal when he played, but he barely played, and I honestly would say when he played in Europe and in the Cup, he was pretty solid. I would say he was pretty solid as a backup keeper to Ramsdale at that point. He then moved over to Crystal Palace, where he's been doing more of the same, mostly just playing cup minutes. And that's kind of where we get into this conversation, because going into that U.S. men's national team semifinal game. The guy has barely played, and that's what you need out of goalkeepers. And before I kind of present to you some of the options that I think we should be bringing in to maybe look to really take his position outside of some obvious choices like Zach Steffen from the Colorado Rapids has been in the conversation, and the up-and-coming Diego Coken, who's yet to get a full-time cap but is a really, really highly touted prospect coming out of the Barcelona Academy right now. Biz, speak to how important it is that Matt Turner finds a new role maybe where he can play a little bit more. What do you think the problem with Matt Turner is right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of saw it when we watched the Panama game. And the reason we added this is we touched on this a little bit during the watch party, and I think it is a really interesting conversation to have with a little bit more of a detailed context to give to anyone that's not familiar with the U.S. goalkeeping situation. Because I think anyone that's familiar more on, you know, the long-term level of what U.S. goalkeeping has been, it's synonymous with the name Tim Howard. So that first and foremost is the thing that I think you have to really lay down when you're talking about, you know, the foundation of the position itself. We've been spoiled for a long time. Yeah. Like, honestly, like close to two decades of my life were with Tim Howard in net and never giving that up, outside of maybe some injuries with Guzan stepping in those meantime minutes, who was not also say what you want about Brad Guzan. I think he's kind of become a meme in MLS times now with, you know, him still playing at the age of 40. Brad Guzan was a solid keeper for a long time. Like, I think he was more suited for like the modern day game too, because he was actually pretty decent with his feet. He played for Aston Villa for years and years. Yeah. So I think that's something that really does need to be illustrated of how spoiled we were, because in really any other era and scenario, Brad Guzan would have been a normal World Cup starting level keeper for most countries outside of, you know, the top couple. So it's like, I think that's something that's really important to note on how spoiled we've been over this, like,
It's a great problem to have, and it just shows how much of a stark difference we are sitting now. Definitely, in the goalkeeper position, right? So
yeah, and 100%. And so that, I mean, that kind of dives into where we're at right now, where we don't have that level of keeper, at least right now. It doesn't mean that they don't exist in the youth systems. It doesn't mean that they don't exist, you know, somewhere in the next, you know, in the next decade where we can have somebody of that level and that talent. But right now, it's a pretty barren wasteland in the U.S. goalkeeping landscape. It's very much so just kind of a standard. You're kind of cycling through a couple keepers that I would rate as just kind of standard international players that are kind of cycling in and out of the job. I think Matt Turner, at his height when he was in MLS and fully confident, even got to that above average level of shot stopping. You could even say the shot stopping itself was like borderline elite. I mean, that's how he made it to Europe. It was just the other things, the other intangibles that were dragging him down.
I think really that
affecting his play.
I think that's what also makes it a little sadder, is because you see a guy like Tim Howard excelling at, you know, in the Premier League. You see Brad Guzan playing in the Premier League, you know, back in the day, and you're like, Matt Turner makes a move to Arsenal. It's like, do you really think he's going to upend and become the Arsenal starting keeper? Maybe not. But it's a sign, it's a vote of confidence that these European scouts are saying, okay, Matt Turner is good enough for this. And I think it's 50-50. 50-50 is like 50% is he hasn't been able to get the full opportunity to be a starter somewhere. But it's also the same fact, whereas these coaches have not trusted him to be that guy. Do they not see that in him as well? I don't know. Pix, what do you think? Do you lean one way or the other in that type of argument?
Yeah, I think it's really tough for him because he's not getting the minutes that he needs to be able to be a national team starting keeper. And I think that that's the biggest issue, where, you know, you have a lot of MLS teams that have really good keepers who are playing every single week. You know, they're the people who are being relied on. They're the people who have, you know, the coach gives them the confidence to make some mistakes. And, you know, there are a lot of goalkeeping mistakes even in the MLS. But I think that league, and giving them, you know, the full like a blank check just to do a lot of stuff with how they organize their defense, you know, how much they distribute the ball, and, you know, having these conversations with their coaches, because they are the starting keepers for the MLS sides, like some of the names that we'll mention, like some of the, you know, the two Ohio goalkeepers are really good in Celentano, and the other one is Schulte, right? Yeah, like I think that the liberty that the MLS gives these keepers to, you know, have different distribution styles, you know, where there's some that are really good at distribution and can play with their feet, there's some that can only shot stop. So I think it's really good to have people who are competing with you that have that liberty and have, you know, the ability to be organizing their back line every single week. And that's not something Matt Turner does, even to the point where, you know, Matt Turner isn't organizing the defense. He's kind of coming into the goalkeeping of where, like, the goalkeeping style of whoever the coach is in, and he's kind of having to conform into their styles too. So I think there's a lot to be said about not only the confidence, but also the amount of tactical liberty that you get as a goalkeeper when you are the starting goalkeeper. And I think that the MLS is one of the best leagues for national team keepers to develop. And we've seen it through, you know, my own Carlos Coronel representing Paraguay sometimes, the goalkeeper of Peru, the goalkeeper of Canada. I mean, there's so many examples that we can name. And it's because of that liberty that the MLS gives. And also the room for error too, which I don't think you know, Turner really has, because he gets those few appearances and he has to make the most. If he makes one error,
and he's not even getting the appearances you think he get. He didn't play in the Carabao Cup or FA Cup quarter and semifinals. Like, these cups were supposed to be his opportunity to play, and then the Crystal Palace manager doesn't even trust him when they get to the more meaty of, like, the big cup games. You know, oftentimes you see the backup keepers on these teams playing for most of the cup run, and if they do get replaced for one of them, it's maybe the final, because it's such, you know, your team finally gets the opportunity. But, like, for Turner not even to play in the, you know, at that stage, that worries me. And, you know, this has been talked about too, and I think too, you make a great point, Pix, about these keepers. And the three that I really want to take a look at are Patrick Schulte, who has been called up and has had some main team caps, you know, in the more January camp-ish type camps. That's where he's been capped fully. He's been great for Columbus for a many number of years. I feel like he'd be a great player to take the next step in Europe. I think he's 25 years old right now. And then there's two other guys, Roman Celentano, who I feel like in the past 2 years, it really has felt like him and Schulte have felt like, you know, 1A and 1B for, like, the next up-and-coming MLS keeper. And then the guy behind them has been Chris Brady, who I feel like this season has taken a really good jump forward to be in the conversation with these two guys. And, you know, for me, I don't necessarily think we're in – I think if we give an opportunity to one of these three guys, or maybe we just rotate them and see who can step up and become, like, at least the next number two – I don't think our goalkeeper problem is as big of a problem as some people, like, make it out to be. I just think we're not giving some of these younger guys the opportunities they deserve, because I feel like we've just been so comfortable with Matt Turner as our one for so long. I don't know. Biz, do you think there's any credence to that?
I was gonna just say, because I would probably push back on that a little bit, solely for it's all based on the perspective in which you're looking at it. Because I agree, in the comfy confines of CONCACAF, I don't think it's an issue. I think there's time to grow. I think out of the players that you named too, I would probably point to Chris Brady as being the one that I think, like, I'm most bullish on, based on just how he's kind of had this mentality over this last, like, year to year and a half, where you're starting to see him maybe turn and figure it out all of a sudden, where there was early struggles, and now all of a sudden it's like he's 21 and
he looks Celentano's like 25-ish as well.
He looks like he's the same age as the other guys with how he plays, where there's that kind of, like, quiet confidence with him, and he is kind of, like, demanding confidence and demanding the back line listen to him when he's on the field. I just watched Chicago this weekend, and when I actually just looked up his age just to kind of confirm and be able to, you know, contribute with some more context, that actually surprised me that he's still that young. I thought I would have, you know, tabbed him as being in his mid-20s still with how he looks. So when it comes to that, I think that he's probably the person out of, like, this younger crop of players in MLS right now that I would probably point to say that's who I would probably put my money on. But when it comes to the actual outside of the confines of, like, the MLS, CONCACAF, when we start getting into some of these serious games when we come to the World Cup, that's when it is all of a sudden a problem. I think we saw it, you know, even in a serious situation like a Panama game in the Nations League, when you're playing a competitive match, it's when these good players, you know, that we bring in from Europe are not getting games, it is significant that it shows in their performance on the field. And, I mean, Matt Turner, I'm telling you right now, a few years ago when he was playing, even, like, as a squad rotation, you know, goalie for Arsenal, he would have made that Panama save at the end. I've never seen Matt Turner be that out of position on, like, especially when he's only facing like one shot on net the entire game. That is not Matt Turner's MO. That is not who he is. Like, that's not what I know him to be. Like, that is just that's a clear and obvious save for Matt Turner 100 times out of 100 prior to what's going on right now. And I think that's why it is so concerning, because we're about to go into this World Cup cycle without somebody that I have even a remote level of confidence in like either one of the two aspects of goalkeeping, where it's, you know, I think beforehand it was always be like, all right, we're gonna go with Turner, and it might be a little bit of a wild ride if you're playing a team that's pressing you high and just kind of being like, he's probably gonna have to make like two or three crazy reactionary saves based on some stupid decisions that he personally makes with his ball distribution. But now it's just Matt Turner can't save anything, like, that's a serious problem. So it turns you to some of the other veteran players that, you know, maybe you've seen that you're cycling back through, like a Zach Steffen, who's sitting on a 7.8 match rating right now in FootMob, and he's got 3 clean sheets in 6 games. It's you're gonna start having to, you know, reward some of those performances on people that are playing, because you need to get form in there, I think, more so than just having someone that you've relied on that's not playing games and just is out of form. I think it's so important right now to try to start looking at that, and then also trying to develop these youth players and bringing them into a position where they could maybe contribute as well, like you're saying. But we're backs against the wall. We're running out of time when it comes to this World Cup.
I mean, we have to try some guys out between now and then, because, like you said, we only have a couple. It's getting close, you know. It's getting very close. So I would want Turner to be pushed, and Turner, I think, needs to make a move in the summer and find playing time upcoming for this World Cup. I don't think a move to the MLS is out of the question as well, you know. Ideally, even if he plays somewhere differently in Europe, he just needs to play at the end of the day.
Well, let me ask you guys this. What do you think then is the ultimate landing spot? Like, in a perfect world, where does he go where he's getting minutes, where you feel comfortable, where you feel like he can take another step forward and he'll reclaim the job and be confident going into this next World Cup? Where's the ideal landing spot?
I mean, I don't know ideal, but I think for me, I would just want him to maybe play. I'm worried, even if, because I say this, because this kind of, I feel like this is kind of screwed Ethan Horvath. But, like, him just playing in the championship for a year and proving that he's an elite shot stopper at that level in a league where a lot of these goalkeepers do face a lot of shots, much like the MLS. I would love for him to be on a mid-tier or a good championship side. You know, just play. All he needs to do is play. Even if Palace just loan him or something, he just needs to play. I don't know. What about you, Pix?
Yeah, I'm going to take a little bit of shot in the dark and say, like, even him returning to the MLS, I think that a lot of people would treat that as a failure, and I think that it might be in a sense of returning back to the MLS, which is obviously a lower, you know, style of play and everything compared to even the championship, arguably, and then obviously the Premier League. But I think that there's so much that can be said about, you know, what I was saying earlier about how good the MLS is for those keepers. If you go to a really bad team and you have a bad defense and you're that guy and you're the one who's making all those stops and you're the team that, you know, gets the wild card and are in ninth, and then you guys, you know, draw, and then you guys have to go to penalties potentially 3 times. I think that there's so much that can be said about, you know, as goofy as our playoff system is and the way that we make it and Americanize it, I think that it's so good for goalkeepers, and they have to face these penalties.
Good
and
point.
They face all these shots because we're such an attacking dependent team. I think that goalkeepers develop really well here. And I think one of the drawbacks, though, is that they allow too many mistakes, because you are allowed to have a lot of room for error. But I do think that, you know, Turner would excel here, obviously, and I think that that would get his confidence back for the World Cup. So if we're talking from a World Cup perspective and what we want for the USMNT, I think that the MLS would be great for him to get his confidence back for a year before the World Cup. What about you guys? What do you think?
I agree. And I like, it's kind of the point I was going to make, where I think right now, because we are in such a back against the wall situation, I think like a low leverage spot with like, I think MLS is just a perfect, like, it's kind of the perfect bounce back trampoline spot for a keeper to really like catch themselves. I mean, Zach Steffen's the perfect, he's like the poster child of that, where a player that went, you know, in the City group, ended up trying to make it with Man City. He did tried to actually kind of cut his teeth in the Prem, did some loans. Like, it did not work out. Europe was one of those things where it's a mentality thing for these keepers too, where I do think, like, either have it or you don't. You have the Tim Howard in you, where you kind of have that dog in you, or you just don't have that level of play in you. And what I feel like the other thing too is, if you don't, it becomes infinitely harder to make it over there, because one, I think already you're chastised and you're kind of like shut out by the collective team that's brought you in, because confidence is everything. If you're a keeper without confidence, definitely, you don't really have much to really hang your hat on. So it becomes that much harder to try to get your foot back in the door of, you know, having an opportunity to really try. And then going out on loan too, if your confidence is shot there, it's kind of a whole new start over situation where the, you know, a lot of the landscape of the actual, the league itself that you're playing in. I mean, a lot of these times these loans are going on a team where you're probably seeing 15 shots a game because they're struggling. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's a team that might be, you know, poised for relegation, and you're sitting there like, my God, man, like there's nothing I can do. I'm facing 12 shots on target a game. It's like, and it's, you know, two on one breaks that I'm having to deal with myself. So I think MLS, because there is such a low leverage spot, like you said, Pixel, too, with nine different teams making the playoffs on both sides, it allows you a little bit more of cushion to, you know, be able to make mistakes and get that confidence back. Because Stefan, when he first came back too, if I recall correctly, also struggled out of the gate initially, and then just kind of like ironed out some of those issues, and now all of a sudden it's just like really hitting and sticking again. So I would say, based on the amount of time, if we had a full 4 years, I'd say Turner should try to figure it out. But because we're in such limited time, I would not be surprised if him and his agent are already talking about it and saying, like, we just need to go on like a loan over there. Or like,
I think it's been heavily reported that he is going to leave in the summer.
Yeah. So
there have been rumors circling for a while. Yeah. All right. Well, the goalkeeper situation is definitely one to watch. You know, we'll be looking at it, you know, the whole year, and looking forward to summer, some summer moves. You never know. One of these keepers could move mid-season. I wouldn't probably say mid-season, probably mid, you know, end of season for them, mid-season for a European move if they do. I mean, if we're talking about mid-season moves, Diego Luna would be a great one. All right, so let's get into MLS week 6 and 7 in just one moment here.
The main topic is what you came for! Ah!
All right, guys, so the meat of the episode coming up right now. MLS game weeks 6 and 7, and I'm gonna start with my target right on picks because I watched a good amount of this game, and it was a pretty surprising result, I'm not gonna lie. New England Revolution getting their first win in week 6, and it was an absolute carry job by their captain and their 10, Carlos Gil, with a penalty. I don't know if it was a questionable call. I was watching it. You know, it wasn't that questionable.
First things first, we got to do respect on his name. It's Carlos Gil.
Well, I was disrespecting him, you know, for picks.
For me. For
exactly. Me. Exactly. And then honestly, just one of those unstoppable free kicks that, like, just top left. No one's going to save that. So I'm going to go to you, picks. How did that game feel? It feels like that classic Football Manager thing where you're giving up first goal of the season to a guy who hasn't scored in 20 games when you give a team their first win. Yeah. But what were you surprised by their results? I mean, Red Bulls did well in week 7, so you have that to hang your hat on. But
yeah, no, that result was super disappointing. Even though we were on the road, New England have been very poor, and we've always been able to figure them out. I think they're obviously in a more rebuild era this time around, but I'm still disappointed, especially the fact that none of those goals were in open play. One was a free kick and one was a penalty. And I'm pretty sure they still haven't scored off of, or maybe they did this last match day, but
they did not score this past match day.
Okay. So yeah, they still haven't scored an open goal in open play. So it's super disappointing the fact that, like, we weren't able to really control the game when, you know, we were just in the MLS Cup. So just like, the fact that we've fallen down to that extent is very concerning in that game. And just like, we were creating chances and stuff like that, but I still think that we need to be able to do more and finish more. And we saw a little bit more about that with Chicago, but there's still a lot of question marks on the team overall.
Biggest question mark for you right now that you want answered first?
I would say that we really need to figure out who's going to be the one who's finishing all our chances besides Forsberg. Obviously, you know, they wanted it to be Choupo-Moting, but I don't think that that's really working. Yeah. I think we always see them being in the same space.
Yeah.
Even I was watching Choupo-Moting's goal against the Revs, and it was like, literally, if you watch the goal back, Choupo-Moting is in the space where
tap-in merchant himself.
I know, he stole, like, it was, they were fighting for the tap-in, like, for the rebound tap-in.
Right after the celebration, he goes and, like, hugs him, and I'm like, dude, he's about to, like, mouth off, why did you steal my goal? Yeah, just disappointing, because it's just, like, especially as a DP, I want more out of that, and I think that it's so regressive about bringing in a 35-year-old as a DP. I mean, that's like, you know, the MLS of 10 years ago. So it's just disappointing, and I wish that we had someone. I always throw out the name Timo Werner and stuff like that, but you know, and we're going to talk about it later on the show, but there's a bunch of moves about, you know, those teams that are in the 8th, 9th, 7th best leagues in Europe, and those guys who are 26, 27, who are playing at the Feyenoords, playing at the Slavia Prague's, are the players that we should be bringing in, and those are the players that are willing to come here and make a name for themselves. So just disappointing that we're relying on 35-year-old to do all that work. But
dude, he's got 3 goals. Come on, man, get off his back. All right, that was a great transition, picks. Houston Dynamo's new DPs. Perfect. Jesus, who wrote that down on the list? I don't know who. Was that you?
That was me.
Okay, yeah, that was me. I'm gonna let you take that away.
even with the phonetic pronunciation, he's like, nope. I'm gonna let Biz do that.
You're gonna let me sink, huh? Not gonna save me.
So Houston Dynamo did bring in a new designated player. We're approaching quickly with the end of the transfer window. A lot of people don't know, with it not being synonymous with like the January window Europe, we still have where you'll still have teams sign players, and it will be kind of goofy. Anything after about that January window closing gets kind of convoluted with what's available even out there. A lot of it can be like free agents or people that, like, you know, have weird contracts that are ending, or different leagues in Europe that might end a little bit.
It's such a weird time to leave Europe, I feel like.
It really is. Yeah. So. Early April is a strange time to be transferring in, like anywhere, let alone coming over from Europe into the MLS. So, I have not seen him play yet. So the player's name is Andre Linger. He is a CAM right wing, is what he's being tabbed as. I tried to do a little bit of background research on him just to kind of get like kind of a player profile, because he's a player that's coming in from Slavia Prague and Feyenoord that I am not personally super familiar with. I haven't seen him, you know, even profiled or like, you know, really much like from a highlight from like Houston themselves on their social media. I was digging for even just a little breadcrumb of something that I could kind of latch onto to, you know, try to provide some more context. But looking at his some of like the underlying analytics of the type of player he is, I found it really interesting that at least on the most recent season that he had for Slavia Prague, he was not high up on the list of chances and chances created. He was actually in like the bottom 20% for the position he was in. The thing that he was really known for was like his defensive actions up there, which I thought was really interesting. He was like top 95 percentile for that. So maybe a little bit more of like a true pressing player. He's only 5'7", so he is a little bit more of a smaller player with maybe a little bit more speed. But I'm really curious how Houston's choosing to use him, because that's not exactly the type of player that I would have, you know, maybe tabbed as what central need is. With that roster still just feels incomplete to me with what things have looked like. And now I'm saying that off of the back of probably Houston's best performance of the season this weekend, after beating LAFC over the weekend 1-0 with a Jack McGlynn banger. So I don't know. I don't really know what the plan is. I'm curious to see what that will look like for him, but I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts just based on that description on what that does for Houston?
One thing I had wanted to note, just looking into it, he also hasn't played since January 4th as well. That was his last game for Slavia Prague in Europa.
That's a good, yeah. That's good.
I think Conference League against Malmo, I'm seeing here. So
might have been unregistered.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, how long does it take him to acclimate? He hasn't made his debut in the MLS yet, if I'm not mistaken. I think that would be listed.
He has
here.
Not. No, he didn't over the weekend. He didn't over the weekend. So that's a good catch, because I actually didn't.
So maybe a little bit more acclimation time for him as well. One thing I will shout out about Houston Dynamo, we talked about it on the watch party as well, just to get a little off topic. Obafemi Owadusu. Oh my God. Obafemi Owadusu. Yeah, never asked me to pronounce names. Center back for the Houston Dynamo. Great vlog series he has on YouTube that Biz or Pix, I forget who put it in our little Discord chat. Really cool to see. So if you guys are looking for any insight into, you know, MLS players, you know, vlogging and, you know, what their career is like and how they kind of prepare and, you know,
some
analyze games.
Apple sponsored.
Yeah. Yeah, really cool.
It's more what it is.
You actually see that a good amount in the USL. There's a few players that actively vlog their stuff, and it's really interesting. So it's cool to see a guy like Obafemi doing it in the MLS. And he did, I know I'm getting off topic, but at the end he did say, I'm not like, he, I think Houston and no, this is conjecture. This is just me basing it off what he said. It's like, he said, I can only make so many videos during the season. And I don't think he necessarily meant is because he's busy. It's like, I think they're probably don't allow him to make so many videos because it is kind of a distraction.
I can't imagine. Yeah. I can't imagine that they'd be cool with that nonstop long term.
Yeah. Just vlogging in the locker room. Like, Jared
especially
McCain.
For a young player. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. TikTok dances. Like,
yeah. Come on, dude. Well, you did drop 40. That's okay. So, yeah. But to get back to the original player, don't really know much about him. And that's the one thing that struck me is like, I feel like there is going to be a bit of a longer acclimation period for him. And, you know, to be fair, Houston is a team that I'm not the most familiar with. So I'm going to pass it to Pix and hope he's familiar.
Yeah, no. I'm not super familiar with the player either, but at least just hearing these teams, these are teams that I want to associate with the MLS, and these are the quality of leagues and the quality of teams, too, that we want to be connecting with our DPs, and especially the age profile and all these different things are ringing bells that are good for me in my ears about, you know, 25 or 26, so still has a lot of career left in him, has a point to prove, especially the fact that he, you know, hasn't been playing and he's kind of getting the boot over the Colts shoulder over there at, you know, a pretty big team. So I think that the MLS is a good place for a lot of these players to really prove themselves. Obviously we saw, you know, Kuipers has been able to do it. I think that a lot of those players that are coming over at that level, because he was from Feyenoord too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did some time prior to Slavia Prague. Yep.
Yeah. So I think that that's perfect where just those levels there are really good. The Eredivisie, you know, the Belgian league. These are really good leagues that I think that translate really well. And I think that they can acclimate pretty well. I think obviously it's going to be a little bit different with him not having played a couple months, but you know, him being a DP, I think Houston are going to need him to start performing. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to acclimate. And I think that these are the type of players that we want to see hearing and more and less of the Choupo-Moutangs and less of, you know, those old players coming over.
Well, if he does play in his next game, I will give you guys a full report because they are playing the Galaxy. And I hope to see it on the vlog. And, you know, sorry to say to the center back guy on Houston, I hope his analysis of the game is him getting cooked and Galaxy wins. So, Biz, I was about to cut you off. What were you going to say?
One last thing that I was just going to kind of pose as a question to you guys, because now just kind of getting a little bit more context with, you know, what – when you were playing detective work with the unregistered thing you found, Dill. I think it's really interesting what Houston is, what their roster builds have looked like over the last couple of years. For anyone that's not familiar, Houston, when I first started watching MLS, you know, kind of in like that like early mid 2000s, really before the Sounders existed, I felt like Houston was up there for being like kind of they've had a MLS dynasty run at one point in their history, kind of in the early 2000s, with like Stuart Holden being on that team. Yet you had like streets won't forget player like Brian Ching way back in the day, that used to play for the US men's national team. You had like these really good teams way back when. Dwayne De Rosario was on those teams. Like you have these players that I think were like just really synonymous with like a winning culture. And what Houston has done now, I feel like they've just kind of lost a brand identity. So the thing that when you see teams like FC Dallas in the same state, Austin FC, who's new in the same state, dropping the amount of money that they are on certain players and bringing them in, like a Peter Musa from Benfica with FC Dallas, or Lucha Acosta coming in on a trade for FC Dallas, trying to like kind of all of a sudden just like establish a win now, all chips all in move.
Yeah.
Austin FC spending 30 plus million on their attack with Brandon Vasquez and Mirto Zuni. And Bukari coming in, like, how does that make you guys kind of look at it and perceive it from the outside? And self-admittedly, not knowing a whole lot about Houston, but I think that's part of Houston's problem is they don't really have an identity for the, you know, the new onlookers for MLS or people that are starting to kind of like get into the league itself as a whole. Like, what is it that you're doing? Like, as Office Space would say, what is it you say you do here? Like, I need to know kind of like what the plan is for Houston in the long term. And I think like they tried to hit the nail on the head in what I've always thought they should do with trying to lean into maybe more the Mexican national team and try to help that with marketability in their brand with like a Hector Herrera. But that was kind of a short-lived experiment that just kind of like fell flat at the end of it too. So I don't know. What do you guys have to say off of that kind of that insight on how do you feel with a team like Houston in that market? And either one, feel free to jump in. How do you guys feel like that is comparative to like an Austin and Dallas? And not necessarily a why, like how do you fix it or a why, but like how does that make you feel watching it as an MLS onlooker, and like what's the perception of that like outside looking in?
You got it, Dale. Go ahead.
Put me on the spot, huh? I don't know. Like comparing those two teams, I feel like, does Houston look at the other Texas teams and say like we need to be like them in terms of how much money we're spending? And I'm just doing a little bit of quick research because obviously one guy that I'm familiar with on Houston is Jack McGlynn. I was high on him, you know, at Philly before he moved over on about a $3 million fee, which I thought was, you know, I thought Philly, if they sold them to Europe, they could get a little bit more, but maybe Jack McGlynn wanted to stay in, get a bigger contract here, you know, be comfortable. And he has 3 goal contributions in his last 3 games. Houston have also, I want to give them a little bit more slack in terms of the signings. They did go out and bring in Ezekiel Ponce last summer for $8.2 million. Lawrence Anali for $3.1 million to be their left wing, but he got a knee injury. And then they also, some you know, American fans might remember, DeJuan Holmes from Preston North End. They brought him back to the United States. So there are some interesting signings, but it does feel like the other signings that they made outside of this season, because those first two were, you know, last season, you know, the midway point. And then the signings for this year were Jack McGlynn and Dwayne Holmes. And then a lot of like outside of Linger, who just got brought in, a lot of like, you know, younger guys from other MLS teams, like a Michael Halliday from Orlando City. So it does feel like they are playing a little bit of catch up with the big signings that these other teams are doing. But if they do hit with some of these guys like Jack McGlynn, and you know, maybe they're waiting for that left wing to come back from injury, they could have something here. I feel like they've looked okay this season, and you know, Austin FC and Dallas are also just, I don't know, they're not teams that I rate super highly outside of Austin, who have been good in the last 5. Dallas, you know, there's just so much variability with these teams at the end of the day, and they just look so inconsistent. But I would like, you know, maybe for Houston to really capitalize on this last win and continue to get some success. But Ponce up top has been a good signing. You know, for 8.2, you probably want a little bit more from him from what you're getting right now. But, you know, there's time to acclimate with some of the new signings. What about you, Pix?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think exactly what you said, where it just like, it seems like they're a little bit like half a season behind everybody else in a sense. Like even the fact that they got this guy so late.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they, like, you know, if he hasn't been playing this long, why didn't they get him
then, you know, like a week after in January or something. Yeah.
So it just like, they always seem a little bit step behind, not even just time-wise, but even in the strategy-wise, like what you were saying with Hector Herrera, like why wasn't that thought of? You know, why isn't the tapping in of the Mexican national team and the Mexican, you know, identity that Texas, you know, brings to? Why isn't that thought of sooner? And I think that Houston always seems a little bit a step behind. And even with these signings, where it's just like, you know, most MLS teams have started doing the recruitment of finding, you know, DPs who are 25 instead of, you know, the older DPs and stuff like that. So the fact that they're just starting to do it, you know, a couple years a little bit too late, I think that really has to do with them being a little bit behind the curve and behind the ball. But, you know, they are doing the right things moving forward. So I think that, you know, as long as they continue to do these right moves, and if this guy does pan out, I think that we're going to be able to see them, you know, shift into the new MLS era in a good way.
Well, I'll shout out one more player on the team, because, you know, if there's a Colombian, I'm going to tell Pix about it. A player on loan to Houston in the last week of March. Dude, I don't know if you're going to know this name. It's not super, you know, unique. Pablo Ortiz from Dunajská Streda. I don't know. I'm looking here. He was on loan at Dunajská Streda from FC Midtjylland, and originally from America de Cali, where he transferred to FC Midtjylland and has been on like 3 or 4 loans, and it just seems like they're sending him all over the world. So he's in Houston now to be a center back. Hasn't made an appearance yet, but do you know that guy?
I don't know that guy. Hearing the fact that he got a transfer over to Midtjylland is huge from the Colombian league. So just that alone, I think that's a little bit.
Yeah, right. That's a great That's like such a good development club too. FC Midtjylland. Yeah. Like those guys know when they're bringing in players. That's a Moneyball team. Football Manager fans know that is a Moneyball style team. But before I move on, Biz, did you have anything else to add in terms of Houston?
Not really. I guess like how I'll kind of make the exclamation point too on, and why I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinions on that, is just the fact that I'm definitely in the camp where I'm a little bit disappointed with the equity that Houston's built up over time in their franchise's history. I have a couple people that I know from my own personal Twitch community that are pretty that are Houston supporters that are a little frustrated with how things have gone, especially with like the Ache Ache, you know, dismissal, where that was kind of like a mutual agreement with him just kind of leaving. And now, like, bringing in a player like this, like you said, I think the whole, if you look at and kind of take a step back of like the whole context of what this signing looks like as a designated player, it's a player that hasn't played in 3 months that was clearly like unregistered.
Does it look desperate?
It does.
Like a guy who hasn't played and then a DP this late, that just like screams of like, we didn't get our first, second, and third target, so we bring in this guy.
Right.
No shade to him, but like, you know, it just feels like, it's like, it just feels that way.
It's going to take him a while to get, you know, up and running. And I think that's kind of the point. You hit the nail on the head, because it's the point I'm trying to make with how Houston is choosing to operate with everything. Like, you brought up the name of Ezequiel Ponce, and I think that for him too specifically, I know this year, I think he's on like 7 matches. He's got a goal and an assist. I think you could also attribute that to also just like not exactly a lot of pieces around him to, you know, create for him. He's a little bit more of like, got a little bit more of a like poacher vibes when I've watched him too. So like having a player like that, that you're spending $7 million on, it just feels like, where are we allocating these transfer funds, and why are we sending them where we're sending them? And like, is there an actual definitive plan? Because even with this Andre Linger signing, and if you would have just waited until the summer, you're also getting like some cap relief with like 2 designated player signings in the summer anyway too, so you have that to kind of hang your hat on. But now you've made this signing where you're signing this guy that you're kind of just taking a chance on, probably because he was a really low leverage buy that you could bring in. But it's like, how is that going to excite fans? And then on top of it too, how are you going to expect him to perform out of the gates with like really having to just kind of hit in stride with the MLS season already going, and him not probably being out, like out of form, and like, I mean, you don't even know fitness. Is he in the middle of his season?
That's,
was he
like
playing
in Texas
enough?
You know,
yeah, like, it's like, there's a lot of question marks.
No matter how fit you are, if you haven't played in that many months, it's still, you're still not going to be fit, you know. You still gotta get your legs back to an extent.
So that's definitely, I mean, that's the reason I added this to, you know, just to the list for the agenda for the episode, because I just think like, you don't see designated players come in at this time in MLS very often. It happens. And so, you know, there can be varying reasons as to why you have.
Well, you know, we'd see it if a DP goes out, then you're like, oh, now we get this DP in. But this feels like so, just so.
Well, and there's various reasons too, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, perfect example. I know the name like Paul Pogba is starting to float around now too. Even like with LAFC, with you know, with his ban that took place, all of a sudden it just was lifted in the past like month or so. So it's like that a signing like that makes sense, because it's a player of quality where, you know, he's been waiting to play, and really it's the only landing spot that makes sense because we're in the middle of our season. He's not going to wait, you know, a couple more months to try to go off to Europe, and so he's going to try to, you know, land here and maybe play a full calendar year, show he can still do it. So it's like a signing like that makes sense in context in this time of year. But when you have a guy that's been unregistered that hasn't played, it just, I don't know, it makes me scratch my head a little bit. And like I said, I think we've all prefaced this by saying like, it could very well work, and I could be eating my words in a couple, you know, in a couple weeks down the line here. But for me, I don't know, Houston's just done enough like over these last few years that really makes me kind of wonder like, who is driving the bus for that organization right now? I don't understand like what a lot of the decision making is, what the thought process is on a lot of the moves. A lot of the moves kind of almost feel segmented, where it doesn't feel like there's like continuity in the decisions, where we're trying to fit players into a style of play. So I don't know. It's interesting too, because they've gotten a lot out of a manager that also was somebody that in the past has struggled in the MLS, and Ben Olsen, that was a person that I was very critical of when he was at DC United, when they rehired, that I was like, that's not going to work and it's going to make no sense. And then all of a sudden, again, kind of against all odds, it has. So now it's one of those things where it's Houston, these last 5 to 10 years, they definitely would be on my list of teams where I'm really wondering what direction are they heading, and what is the thought process into what you're trying to do? Are you trying to get better? Are you trying to develop like youth? What's the plan? I think collectively is, I guess, what I'm asking when it's all said and done with this conversation.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see a little bit, and I just hope they don't figure it out next week against the Galaxy. Before we get into another, you know, Houston talk for 20 minutes was not on my bingo card for this episode, but I like it. Let's do a quick one before we talk about some manager stuff, because I feel like we're going to talk about that for a little bit as well. So I just want to go through some CONCACAF Champions League updates. There's a couple games that ended 0-0 that we can get quickly through. So we'll do the one that isn't Galaxy. Club America versus Cruz Azul, 0-0 in their first leg. Some
snoozer.
Yeah, snooze fest. I remember you saying that. Some Liga MX cannibalization to get those teams out. Obviously, as MLS guys, we want an MLS team to win it all, and we'll see if that happens. Galaxy versus Tigres in Paint Sills game back. I don't know if you watched the picks. Did you watch any of it? Maybe the highlights?
Which one is it? Galaxy versus Tigres?
Yeah, the 0-0. Did you watch any? No, okay. So Biz and I were able to watch it. I watched most of it live, and then I watched the next morning the Spanish-speaking highlights for CONCACAF put out 15 minutes of highlights for a 0-0 game. That caught me off guard. Yeah, I pretty much did. But like Biz messaged me, he's like, Paintsville completely unlocked something with the Galaxy, and maybe that didn't happen in this last game against RSL, but it's definitely something to look forward to. I'm very excited for the second leg here coming up this week. I really hope we pull through. I'm curious to see if we get any other players back. I don't think we will. I think we'll be pretty much in the same players. But any quick thoughts on that game? Because you watched a good amount of it, Biz?
You know, not a ton that you didn't really already add, because I'll just kind of double down and say that, yeah, Paintsville just, like, I think puts a lot of players for the Galaxy that were maybe playing out of position or were having to do multiple types of things on the field, like Peck specifically. It allows him to just kind of focus and have a little less attention on him, and that in itself is just a huge asset for the Galaxy to have, because Paintsville, he just stretches the field with his speed. I mean, I honestly you forget without watching him for a couple games when he comes on how fast that man is honestly incredible. Like pretty much any over the top ball that and even if it's like 20 yards in front of everybody, he's got a chance of getting it.
When he was in Europe, I remember you saying this, and I looked it up too. He was like a top end speed guy, like with the likes of like a Van de Ven and things like that, for how fast he is as a person.
I think he's like top 6-7 in the world on like the sprint charts for world football. It's like he is blazing. So having that type of speed and having that out really does, you know, I think kind of nullify a lot of your attacking style, especially when you're playing as oftentimes as direct and as quickly and as fast paced as the Galaxy do. So I just wanted to point that out and say, I mean, you alluded to the comments that I made, but it's the truth. It allows Peck to not, you know, consistently have people just bearing down on him with, you know, the whole rest of the field being left exposed, because they know so long as they lock him down, the creation with no Marco Royce now in the team either, with him being hurt, there's just nothing the Galaxy are going to be able to do to create with like the other pieces on the field, because your main person is really just Gabriel Peck, and typically he'd be the one that's trying to finish a lot of those chances. He's not necessarily even trying to create. So it's disheartening to see like all of the injuries, because it is one of those things where without Ricky Pooch to kind of run the whole thing, everybody's just being kind of shifted into these different spots they might not be used to. But just adding Paintsville to the equation itself is just like bumped, I would say, even just a couple notches of ability, and like the team's performance level, it was apparent watching that Tigres game. It was like it really made Tigres uncomfortable with a couple of the over the top balls.
Well, another game that we had that ended up in a draw, but a little bit more of an exciting draw. Vancouver's versus Pumas at Vancouver, 1-1. I think they're kind of a team we're really all rooting for to go, you know, do well in this tournament. I feel like they're hitting a really nice peak, and it's a thought that I had. Funnily enough, it was a shower thought, you know, the classic shower thought for the Vancouver Whitecaps. I feel like they've always been this team for the past few years that feels like they're that scrappy team that makes the playoffs and then, you know, win a game, maybe two. And it feels like they're punching up. It feels like they're beating teams better than them. But it definitely feels like this season they feel established. They feel like they're an established team.
They're a top couple teams in the West.
Exactly, like a top four, a top five, a team that deserves a place in the playoffs. And they should be, you know, you never want to do this, but they're going to be punching down now. And that, you know, we're happy for them. They have a really, you know, deep attack now. I completely forgot they brought in Emmanuel Sabi from Le Havre, who's been, really good goal. And he's been good coming off the bench. And, you know, Jaden Nelson still injured, Ryan Gold injured, but Brian White, Sabi, Ali Ahmad, Brian the White. Canadian national team wing. Like, they have a very deep attack.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I'm only speaking of the tech. They have a very complete team as well. But there is one thing that was funny that kept happening during this game. I wasn't able to watch it live, but picks, you know, we're all lit up here. But what was going on in the game there? Well, it looks bright in here.
Yeah, no, I was watching a bit of the game, and the lights went out like 3-4 times.
Dark arts?
The game a couple times. It could have been in Vancouver.
Literal dark arts.
They're going to have to travel to Pumas away, which is going to be tough. But yeah, I was watching some of the game. Ocampo almost like chipped the keeper too, and then the lights went off like 3 minutes later. I was like, Jesus. But yeah, I think it was an interesting game, and I'm really excited about a lot of these games, about how these MLS teams are going to be able to.
Go to Mexico.
Yeah,
Galaxy and Vancouver need to hit that, like, you know, and just both move on.
It all comes down to it too, and it's they've done it to themselves again. That game ended with all the lights out stuff. That was very much like MLS After Dark, CONCACAF After Dark, like vibes with that. But Pumas saved them. It was Coco Karaskia, ex Houston Dynamo player, that ended up leaving after this past season as well.
Is that where he is? Dude, that guy's so good, man.
He's with Pumas, yeah. And one of my favorite CONCACAF players that exists currently right now. And so he ended up transferring out to Pumas, and got a late equalizer in the 87th minute that really tilted things in Pumas' favor with that away goal. And I mean, Vancouver's got backs up against the wall here for going down.
The away goal, to be honest.
Yeah, the away goal is huge. So, I mean, that really, Vancouver now has to score on the road in order to be able to.
In Mexico come City, out with, which is no easy job. You know,
it is not. So,
Vancouver has the cold. Mexico City has the elevation. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, it'll be a tall order for all of these teams. Cause, I mean, right now, if you're actually looking at. You're actually looking at all of the results with Champions League. I mean, Dill, you mentioned about the Club America Cruz Azul one, but I mean, the only one that went the right way was the MLS versus the MLS.
So I know.
You only have one team that's actually technically ahead on it with Inter Miami and LAFC, which is a natural transition.
Yeah, very natural.
But LAFC winning 1-0 in that game over Messi in Miami, going into the second leg in Miami. But Nathan Ordaz with the goal in that one to give LAFC the lead. The one thing I wanted to highlight in that one was that I actually didn't know, because I didn't watch the second half of that game. Mm-hmm. Busquets actually is on yellow card suspension for that, so he will not be available as well for the second leg of that one, which I thought was notable. And on top of it, the game that just ended with Toronto and Inter Miami, I thought it was very interesting that they also elected to have Messi and Jordi Alba both go a full 90 minutes with this game in the middle of the week upcoming, which is usually something you would not, you know.
Yeah, they play in 3 days. 3 days from now. So
that was kind of an interesting decision, especially against like a team like Toronto, where with how well established Miami is in the league, I thought that was actually kind of a little bit of a head scratcher for Mascherano on choosing to do that, where I probably would have just kind of, even if it means taking the L against an inferior Toronto team with how they look today, it's like, so be it. You need to go. I mean, the priority for Inter Miami is they need to win Champions League this year. I mean, like, with everything that's on the wall here, I know ownership wants that, like the league wants that, like everybody from a standpoint of like who's up in the higher up seats, like that's like the main priority for everything. Like Apple, that it would be such a big thing for Apple backup. Yeah, like you name a name that's, you know, tied into the whole contract deal of this, like they want it to happen. So it's why it made me kind of scratch my head on why that was the decision today. But yeah, I digress.
Inter Miami cracks me up as a team, as I'm kind of just looking at their best 11 and their schedule. It's like you have mostly all Spanish speakers, and then you have Finnish Robert Taylor as your head. It's just so funny.
And then Drake Calendar now and
then. I know, exactly. But that's just to me to say, it's like we talked about it a little, but I mean, Telasco Segovia and Redondo coming in as, you know, these two pickups that just feel so. I mean, Redondo's been here since last year, but just feel like such perfect fits for what this team is trying to build around Messi, Alba, and Busquets and Suarez. It just I feel like that's the get. Those are the type of players that you get when you can bring in like these South American legendary players, as well as Spanish
Allende. I'd add Allende to that list.
Good call.
Teddy Allende is very good. But yeah, it's crazy what Miami. I mean, even just today, like when I was watching the end of that, like Alan Obando, their new signing that we highlighted on the either the watch party or the last podcast, I can't remember, but it was the Ecuadorian player that they brought in on loan from Barcelona in Ecuador. Got his first minutes today, spelling Suarez. Honestly, a little clunky looking in the first game, if I'm being real. But he's young, and I would expect an adjustment over the first couple. But
Wait, they brought yeah, in, I mean, And they brought in this Maximiliano Falcon guy. I know him from Football Manager, and he's another Uruguayan player. Dude, it's crazy, their recruitment. It makes sense, though. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
It's unbelievable the discounts they can get from some of these guys, too. Never be able to sign on any other MLS roster, but they just want to go and play with Miami. So a lot of these guys are just taking a massive discount and making it work.
I mean, and take a look at it, too. It worked out for – it's a good propeller to getting an even bigger move with, like, Diego Gomez being a regular starter for Brighton now. So it's like the pathway is there for a team like this. So it's definitely exciting. And you know what? We're going to do another natural segue now that we're done talking about CONCACAF. I've always heard if you make note of the segue, it makes it smoother. LAFC, who beat Inter Miami here 1-0, then fell to Houston 1-0. San Diego FC versus LAFC in week 6. I see here, I don't know who wrote this, and I'm going to question you. San Diego FC, the bad boys of the MLS? Come on, man. Who said that? Who wrote that down? I know Pix wrote that down.
Oh, I wrote it. Oh, dude.
Defend yourself right now. Defend yourself right now.
Oh, man. Okay. I was not expecting to get exposed for writing that, but fair enough. Here we are. I guess the whole thought process and my thesis behind that bullet point was really, I mean, it's kind of pointing up to the other couple bullet points that we wrote down with everything that's been going on. And, you know, I say it a little tongue in cheek, but I mean, there is some pretty serious things that have been happening with San Diego since they've come into the league here. I think some of it you can point to. There is a very, very passionate fan base out of the gates that is already existent, which is really cool for the team itself. That's not like every expansion team that comes in. There's not always that level of a supporter group, not just like people showing up, because there's fans usually selling out with a lot of these expansion teams, and there is a market there. Mm-hmm. But the level of the supporters group and how, like, I think just the level of like how loud they are during games, some of the chants that you're hearing, like, I think are really exemplary for the standpoint of like what the team itself wanted out of it. Now the negative side though of kind of what that's turned into is we've had some of the discriminatory things that we've seen present within CONCACAF that are starting to kind of leak their way into that. And that's something that we've also mentioned that San Diego was doing we thought kind of almost the antithesis of what we've mentioned with Houston about like integrating where they are geographically with melding their whole style and their team identity with the things around them, with the culture around them, with Mexico being just only, you know, a finite amount of miles away from San Diego itself. You kind of have that like inherent bond of the Mexican culture, and bringing in like a Chucky Lozano right out of the gate to kind of be like the poster boy for the team and being that player that like the Mexican community can kind of rally around and go out and want to see. That's really exciting to have. But now you've had those Mexican supporters that are there and are, you know, truly giving the best support and being there as fans and being supportive to the team. But then you're also getting the negative connotation that is associated with that, with a lot of the Mexican national team right now. That's still been a problem for the Mexican national team as well, with this discriminatory homophobic chant that keeps coming out. That's bled its way into the San Diego games as early as the opener. It happened within, I think, the final like 5 to 10 minutes of the opening game at home that they hosted. So I think that's something that's really concerning that they're trying to get a handle on. And then that actually melded into the rivalry game that they just hosted over this weekend. Is the whole point that we brought it up with San Diego FC and LAFC. San Diego hosting LAFC and bringing probably one of the other more serious fan bases that exists within MLS currently right now. With LAFC coming to town, there was understandably some passion shown in that game, but there was also some things, the discriminatory chant showed itself again. And then there was also some violence that took place after the game, which is not something that you hear in the MLS very often. I'm not saying it's like this great thing and I'm all excited about it, but I will say,
why is this smiling right now?
This is so exciting.
But I will say it is something that I do think is kind of, I don't know, I feel like trying to articulate it is kind of hard to like kind of walk around, where it's like, I don't want to bleed into saying like, I'm tiptoeing around the idea of saying like, it is good for the league, but it's bad for the league as well. It's like kind of that, like kind of 50-50, because I think it's showing that there are people there that like do seriously care about it. But I think there's also that negative connotation where you have people that are clearly coming to also just start trouble. And that's also not what the league wants as well. And I think like there's that fine line that you're trying to kind of tightrope, where that's why MLS, I think, also is too sheepish to be able to bring in a lot of the supportership traditions, because they know that hooliganism kind of like, can also start to be present when that stuff starts to show itself.
Sure.
So I feel like that's why they've also kind of tried to, you know, cut the head off the snake, so to speak, with a lot of that stuff. And that's why I think a lot of MLS supporters and people that like really care about that whole supportership and the sense of community and belonging get a little upset when it comes to that with MLS. But it's like, how do you, what is a good way to be able to handle that and being able to snuff that out? It's, I really do think it is kind of just like having to kind of put the hammer down and say, no, we can't do that. And I don't know, I'd be curious to see what you guys think about that with everything that's gone on, because now with San Diego and LAFC, clearly there's a rivalry starting, which I think is great for the MLS itself. But I don't know, Dill, what do you think with the whole, that whole tight roping of where do we go from here as MLS? And also, what does it mean for like San Diego and LAFC itself?
I'm just curious to know, because, you know, I haven't been a fan of the MLS for as long as you have. It's like, has this ever been a problem with any other team or rivalry? Is it ever escalated? I mean, you know, this is, we say it as it's like new to the MLS, but this happens all the time in other sports here in the United States. So it's like, we ain't new to this, is what I'm trying to say. You know, we can throw hands too. No, I'm not saying that. Yeah. But like, these are things that happen with, you know, very passionate fan bases. And at the end of the day, some of it is unavoidable. Obviously, the chant stuff is something that's bled in from national team stuff to, and now is bleeding into league things. And, you know, it's prevalent all across the world. So I'm curious to see how the MLS will choose to deal with these type of things, because I feel like MLS has definitely branded itself as a very inclusive league. I feel like a lot of the supporters groups have, you know, made themselves out to be very inclusive, you know, and there's many supporters groups for many different teams that kind of like can hit like, oh, you identify as this, or you like this about soccer, or just the fact that it might be just a certain language speaking supporter group. There's a lot of different supporter groups that hit so many different bits on teams. So it's like, maybe this is just a small minority of a, you know, it might not even be a supporter group that's doing this or anything like that. But like, there are other places where you can find a more comfortable and, you know, safe place within your team. And I think that's what they just have to promote, because at the end of the day, it just goes back to, you know, like you were saying, they're sheepish on the whole hooliganism culture and worried about that. But the MLS doesn't need to lean into any of that, because it is its own thing. It's not like we don't need to be like Europe just because the USL is, you know, doing promotion relegations. Like, we can see if it works, and if it ultimately does, you know, that'll be cool too. But it's like, the MLS does not need to be a one-to-one recreation of a European league. I don't think it ever will be with just what the US is. And, you know, we were talking about it a little bit, you know, yesterday after our watch party. It's like, baseball is such an American sport and has such a strong culture and has all these systems that work really well because it's been around for so long, you know, 110 plus years, 120 plus years. So it's like, the MLS doesn't have that same time, and, you know, it'll become its own thing in the next few decades, but we just have to be patient with it, and that's okay. I know I hit a bunch of different things, but Pix, what do you think?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things, especially, it's really interesting looking at it, San Diego versus LAFC too, because LAFC is another expansion team that had to grapple with the same thing about having this chance. And something that I read about was one of the things that they started doing early on is like, especially having the fans kind of stomp it out, but also just sanctioning the team overall and having, you know, some games behind closed doors. I think the most important thing is punish. Like, we can tell that these fans are super passionate, right? But if you're taking them away from the game and they have to watch it at home and they can't go to the games, I think that that really creates an incentive where, hey, we're not allowing this at all. We're not, you're not going to be able to come to this game. Yeah. And I think the sooner that happens, the better it is. And LAFC kind of did the right thing in doing that so early. And I think that, you know, they have to follow suit and do the same thing. Yeah. And then in terms of the violence, I think that, you know, I've been to Red Bull Arena games, international friends and stuff like that, where like there's been stabbings, there's been people punching in the parking lots. Like, it's like, it's a reality of the sport that it has to be faced by the MLS, especially once you're opening up the doors all at once, especially with all these big teams coming, all these expansion teams. And it's not a good thing, but you have to find a way to turn that passion into, you know,
redirect that energy.
Redirect it, yeah. So the fact that that energy exists and that passion it exists is a concerning thing, but it's a positive thing that can be redirected. So it's just like, while that it was used poorly in this instance. I don't think that people should be, you know, fighting against each other, you know, knocking each other out on the streets. Mm-hmm. I do think that that energy can be translated and redirected to make something more beautiful. And I think that with more time, I think that that will happen with more organization of supporters groups and stuff like that. But the most important thing is to stomp it out as early as possible, especially with the homophobic chants and stuff like that.
Well, honestly, Pix, that is very well said. Beautifully said at the end there, dare I say. But I'm going to be a downer now. Let's talk about some coaches getting fired. Laurent Courtois after game week 5 and Peter Vermes after game week 6. You know, we've been talking about, you know, these are moves that kind of happen. You know, the Laurent Courtois one was, you know, really quickly after that game that they played in week 5. And then Peter Vermes, very similarly after week 6, supporters group speaking up about the situations as well. And a couple of next managers possibly on the hot seat. But I'm going to go to you, Biz, first. Which of the two of these ones surprise you the most?
I mean, definitely Courtois. I think the writing on the wall has been there for Vermes for now for, like, I don't know, probably a couple of years, to be honest. It's just, I think anytime, I mean, we've even had the conversation on this podcast in the last couple episodes on the Matthew Doyle article about, you know, new era coaching kind of taking over the league. I just think when you have coaches that have been in a certain seat, just it's natural for not even just necessarily complacency with the manager themselves, but I just think within the team, the principals start to get up maybe a little bland. Players start to maybe, like, I don't know, cut corners or just not listen or disagree with what's, you know, being taught because it's just, you know, consistent routine that just starts to become a little monotonous. So I do think that eventually, like, outside of, like, the true greats that are able to constantly get that out of their players. And I think in the terms of MLS, you can actually, I mean, Peter Vermes is in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. I mean, the guy is royalty in the sport here locally. So, it should not be, you know, glossed over how much he provided that city. It's a shame that I feel like over these last few years that it kind of ended the way it did because, I mean, they really went out with, you know, really without much fuss over these last couple of years. They've been definitely like a bottom five team in the MLS. And, I mean, there's a reason why they made the decision. I actually wanted to read something really quick on what the South Stanton supporters read. And it's a little long, but I think it does justify it. This was the Casey Cauldron and South Stanton supporters doing a group call for Peter Vermes to resign earlier in the week. But it read like this. So, as the official supporters groups of Sporting Kansas City, the Casey Cauldron and South Stanton Supporters Club write to you today with urgency and frustration. We are at a breaking point, one that demands decisive action to protect the legacy, culture, and future of our beloved club. For over 2 decades, Peter Vermes has been a defining figure in Kansas City soccer, from his time as a player with the Wizards as his transformation of Sporting Kansas City into an MLS powerhouse. The championship victories, the commitment to a strong, decisive defensive identity, and the winning culture he once cultivated will always be respected. However, history and loyalty cannot be shields against accountability. The trajectory of this club on the field has become unacceptable, and we can no longer stand by while mediocrity overshadows our once proud legacy. It goes on for a little while yet, but I think that kind of, you know, gives you the point of where the supporters stood. And I think it also kind of just, like, it's a really good microcosm of what the point I'm trying to make as well of, he was great, but I definitely feel like it's the writing's been on the wall. The Courtois one's interesting, and it's something too that I did kind of wanted to dive in and get your guys' thoughts, because we've discussed a little bit on the state of what Montreal has looked like over these last few years. Montreal, you know, has gone through a rebrand. They've gone through all of these different things in their time in MLS. They were once known as the Montreal Impact, and those were kind of the glory days of Montreal, where it was a team that, maybe, you know, similar to how you described Vancouver, Dill, maybe punched up in weight pretty often. I mean, it's a team that literally at one point had Didier Drogba on the squad. So it's like they've done some pretty amazing things as a franchise in terms of MLS and what they provided the league. But now over these last few years, I feel like it's really fallen flat on what the teams looked like. As of right now, I actually have the one of the depth charts and like how the designated players are aligned right now. And it's not even a for sure thing that Veroni is necessarily on their books as a designated player. And that's the one senior designated player that's on their team right now, if he is one. So it really goes to show the amount of money that's being invested in Montreal. And it's almost just kind of like an apathetic approach from like ownership and management. Yeah. And that's something that's really concerning. And you have an ownership group that also owns Bologna over in Italy, with Joey Saputo, who has really taken some criticism from the Montreal supporters and has kind of taken his talents over to the Italian league to really kind of focus on that as a whole. So I find that what's happening in Montreal really sad, because Courtois actually got that team that under those circumstances into the playoffs last year as a wild card team. So I think that's a really impressive accomplishment, and kind of pulling the plug on that as a whole after just five games, I feel like is a disservice to him, and honestly kind of a slap in the face to the fans on somebody that was honestly kind of labeled. I heard his name held not in necessarily like the same regard as Wilfred Nancy, but I mean, like, I heard people saying, like, kind of in a similar cultivation standpoint of, we want to bring this guy up, and he has a lot of that like tactical acumen that we think could maybe replicate what Nancy's doing right now in the league with what he provides to the team. And then just kind of going the other way without really much context to supporters, I feel like is really interesting. So I don't know, Pix, what do you have one or the other with Vermees or Courtois? What stands out to you?
I think, like you said, I think the writing was on the wall for Vermees, but just a matter of when, because he'd been around for so long. I feel like it really needs to be put into context that this is like one of like the longest standing managers. When did he, like 2008 or something?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't have it in front of me.
Something but that like sounds that, right. Where from 2008 to 2025, he was like out of like the large leagues, he's like the fourth and longest tenured manager. And the other one that's in one of the top leagues was the Hoffenheim manager, I'm pretty sure. But like, you know, this is insane.
Yeah, it's
about
incredible.
Seeing his transition through all the years of MLS and all the eras of MLS. But I think that one of the things that we can really attribute to him is the fact that he did, like, for the past 5 years, he hasn't innovated and he hasn't adapted to the new MLS era. And a lot of credit that you can give him is the fact that he did bring, you know, the Kansas City Wizards to become Sporting Kansas City. And I think that is really important, where he did change eras, but he wasn't able to adapt now that he is where he is now. So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, he is still an MLS coach later down the line. I think that there's still some teams who, you know, are still phoning it in and still are a little bit complacent, where they're not really trying to do ambitious moves on coaching. They just want to get a guy who can, you know, has proven himself and can do it for a while and have consistency. So I expect to maybe see him back. It's just such a weird situation with how long he'd been there. And, you know, he was the Kansas City. So it's going to be interesting to see a new.
Yeah, it'll feel weird
on the sidelines.
It'll feel weird.
I'll have to say, too, in regards on the other end of this, what you're saying, the surprise of the Montreal project, it definitely felt like this was a rebuilding year where they're expecting to be bad. If you just look at the signings, it's like you bring in guys like Jalen Neal, Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy, Caden Clark, and Brendan Craig, all young developmental players who just didn't, you know, take that next step at the club that they were, and they're trying to make these shrewd signings and bring him here to Montreal to develop and maybe work in a new system and take that next step. And then your biggest signing of the offseason is Hennady Sinchuk from the Ukrainian leagues for $5.3 million, an 18-year-old who is yet to play. So, and outside of some other veteran free players, it's like, what do you expect out of a coach when these are the moves that you're making? And last season you were a play-in team, you know, in the standings. It's like, this is a project that you're expecting to be bad if these are the type of signings that you're making, and you're making a big signing on an 18-year-old, and you know that can be a good, but he hasn't even played this season. And the outside of that, it's these other players who, you know, are hoping you can develop into, you know, regular starter type players, but right now in their career they haven't shown that yet. So it's a weird situation, and now it's like, it's these new young guys. Some might get screwed because they were promised a certain type of role or a certain type of path with this coach and with this system. And now you bring in a new coach, and that's a tale as old as time. They just might, this might just screw their development even more, but you never know. On the other hand, it could work with the new coach as well, but you just don't know. And I just hate these really quick, you know, reactive firings, especially when you're only five games into the season with a team or a roster that's not really built to make the playoffs.
It's what St. Louis City did last year with Bradley Carnell, and Bradley Carnell is now currently at Philadelphia Union. So it really, I don't know. It's reactionary. I feel like in MLS it's a long season. You don't need to. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be so blunt with your decision making.
You can sneak into the playoffs so easy too. It's not so easy, but there's so much opportunity to sneak in.
It takes like a month or two of really good play. If you can stack some wins together, you can probably sneak into a wild card spot, even if you've had a pretty putrid rest of the season. There's a lot of freedom. They want parity, so that's why it exists that way. So
yeah, no, there's definitely a chance we can make the playoffs, right? Because the Galaxy are worse. We can definitely make the playoffs. So that is going to be it for the main topics for this week. We are going to move into one grab bag, and it's going to be a very interesting grab bag. Biz is going to lead us off. So let's get into the grab bag right now and talk about some. I'm going to leave you on a little cliffhanger there.
It's the grab bag.
Let me reach into that bag. Biz, what do you got?
You know, I decided to reach into the grab bag today, and today I think I'm going to pull out some. I'm feeling generous. I'm going to pull out some food for all of y'all. How do you guys feel about burritos? We're going to the Burrito Squad, the guys that have been kind of making waves in the social media world for the U.S. Open Cup. We've mentioned the U.S. Open Cup has been going now. We're through two rounds. Going into round number three, and the boys by the names of El Farolito SC, also known as the Burrito Boys in U.S. Open Cup, are still alive somehow. We have kind of deemed them as the Something About Soccer honorary amateur MPSL club as they knocked off Monterey Bay, an actual MPSL championship side, over this past week or two. With the U.S. Open Cup results, they will be going on to the next round, and they have officially already been awarded. So how U.S. Open Cup handles all of this, they've upped their prize money and really doubled most of the prize money this year. Nice. Kind of an incentive by the U.S. Federation themselves to try to start, giving more to some of the lower level teams, which I think is a great start for some of the conversations we've had with what's wrong with Open Cup, in my opinion. Yeah. So the amateur teams are actually, it was once $25,000. It is now $50,000 for the top amateur, like amateur in quotations, team that is not considered like professional in any capacity. So they're the last ones standing, making it through to this round. So they have been awarded that $50,000 bonus.
Wow, that's a lot of burritos.
So for anyone, it is absolutely. So burritos all around at El Farolito next time. But to give a little bit of lore about the team really quickly, because I think it is such a fun story. And if you have not heard about El Farolito, I would highly encourage you guys to go and check out the actual long form story. There's a couple articles that are written about the team and just like the journey that they've gone on. But I'll give you guys a couple of the bullet points on what makes this team so unique and kind of one of the true U.S. Open Cup honestly, kind of fairy tales that you wouldn't think are necessarily a real life thing here in the States, because I think the one thing that we always get criticized for is not necessarily having like this long form tradition, but the U.S. Open Cup, I think why it's so cherished by so many, CONCACAF sickos is the fact that it is the lone thing that we have that is, several decades old. So El Farolito SC started way back in 1985. They're actually proud owners of the U.S. Open Cup, actually winning it in 1993. It's on display in their restaurant out in San Francisco. So a San Francisco local squad. They were actually at the time known as Club Deportivo Mexico because they have a strong Latino community that is present there, and the owners themselves are of Mexican heritage. So that actually qualified them back in the 1994 CONCACAF Cup winner. They actually played they hosted Necaxa of the Mexican First Division and actually played him in the quarterfinals, losing 5-1. So I thought that was a really cool tidbit where this team has always just kind of had a long-term level of success that is constantly been present ever since they were founded. So fast forward to today on where they're at now. This is back-to-back third round appearances for them in the U.S. Open Cup. They did the same thing last year, winning the exact same award. So this team is just kind of known as those guys in the MPSL. Just constantly winning. They actually won the MPSL for the first time since they were included in it last year, winning. They are a part of like the Out West division in it, and they beat Motown FC in the final, so winning that. But all in all, a team that is known just for like the club itself owning a bunch of Mexican taquerias around San Francisco, which I think is just the coolest.
Oh, they're a San Francisco team?
They are San Francisco, California.
Wow, that's interesting.
if you like burritos, you like beer, and you like soccer, El Farolito SC is the club for you. But I would encourage you guys to go and take a peek at just more about the team, because it is such a fun story, and there's some really in-depth articles that kind of give you the full breakdown, the lore of the, you know, the ownership, how it came to be. And it's just one of my favorite stories that is currently in existence in US soccer right now. It's kind of a treat to follow them throughout this whole process.
Well, let me add a little bit of context then. I did not realize, I did a little research before as well. I didn't realize they were a San Francisco team, because their next match is against Sacramento Republic, who are another NorCal. So it's a NorCal. It's a NorCal. Just happened. NorCal Derby. And Sacramento Republic, notoriously known for being the 2022 dream team that almost won the U.S. Open Cup, losing to Orlando City. That's going to be a really good game. And is there a sneaky way? I don't know, like, you know, obviously with the USL stuff possibly expanding and becoming that three-tiered system, is there a world where this team is like a, you know, kind of like, oh, maybe we do a San Francisco team and
they win enough of these bonuses?
Yeah, maybe. Right. I don't know. Exactly. They buy their way in.
They pulled 75K in the past 2 years. Who knows? Like, maybe possible.
I do have one question about burritos before we go, and I'm going to ask Pix, our South American correspondent. I don't know if that's racially charged, but I'm just going to ask him anyways. But
maybe a little. But
I once saw a guy on a YouTube vlog bite his burrito. You know, obviously, usually you'd go from, you know, not right a here, euphemism. Right? Is that a psycho move?
Middle bite?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
What the hell is wrong with it?
It completely changed my perception of the guy. Pix, have you ever seen that before?
I have not seen that.
But that man needs to be imprisoned.
I would snatch the burrito and throw it in the trash.
Yeah, agreed.
Eat the burrito.
No, that is.
Incorrect. I can't. Maybe it was just like a misinput on Tetris, and he didn't turn it right before he did it. But yeah, I've only ever seen it once, and it was from a fellow Filipino. So
that's crazy. It's like eating a hot dog that way too. Like,
yeah,
just biting it in half.
Yeah, just full on. You just half in the glizzy.
Well, when the glizzy's too big, you got to cut in half. Let's be real.
Okay. I've never had a glizzy too big. So
okay.
Wow, crazy. All right. All right. Well, that is the grab bag. It turned into the glizzy bag. But we will go into our predictions before we wrap up the episode. One thing I will say, and I'll say this part first before we do our predictions. Our next watch party in 2 weeks is not going to be on a Saturday. It's going to be on a Sunday. And we are going to do our first ever Liga MX game. Mm-hmm. Lyon versus Monterrey. Some big names on those teams, obviously. Oh, not any. Well, they got Sergio Ramos on Monterrey. We got James Rodriguez on Leon. I won't forget your boy.
He was worried. I saw
him. And it is the final match day of the Clausura. So match day 17 of 17.
Decision day.
And Biz, you had a little context in terms of where those two teams are sitting in the standings because of why we chose that game.
And it will be different by the time we're actually going. So true. I'm hoping that it ends up working out a little bit for the better. So I'm hoping like Lyon and Monterrey go on a little bit of a winning streak each, because it'd be even more fun. But yes, with Monterrey sitting down, they're currently in seventh place and Lyon is in fifth. I think it's top 10 make it in the Liga MX playoffs, if I'm not mistaken.
Because
they have a kind of a play-in set up in a similar fashion where it's like a 10, almost honestly, kind of how like the NBA does it, where they're doing like a 10 versus 9, 8 versus 7 type of thing. That's how it's formatted down there. So with that being said, there's room for both teams to move. Lyon's only 3 points removed out of first place currently. With all the first place teams, there's like a three-way tie on 30 points right now. Lyon's sitting on 27, and then Monterrey was on 22 sitting in seventh place.
So you were right. Top six automatically in, and then there's the other two do a play-in game. Yep.
Okay. So
I would
seven,
doubt
seven
you.
Eight, nine, ten. Thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah.
Well, I did. But yeah. So, that, but...
Yeah, you did. You fact-checked me. But yeah, so that hopefully that is for somebody playing for something in some capacity for the Clausura to make it even more exciting. But that was really the only Liga MX game that was worth a damn that day, because the other two were just pretty much the bottom feeders in the Clausura currently.
Damn. Well, I'm excited for that. And yeah, we were all talking a little bit before. It's like we want to do some MLS. We want to do some CPL, some Liga MX, CONCACAF Champions Cup, Club World Cup, World Cup when it gets to that. We want to do all types of stuff for the watch party. So we're excited to finally, you know, put our money where our mouth is, because we could just keep doing MLS for 12 weeks and never expand. Yeah. That'd be a bad look. So we're doing some things a little bit differently with the predictions as well. All three of us are going to pick our own three games to predict. Obviously, there can be overlap, but we're just going to not predict the same game. So then we get some predictions that cover the whole gamut of the MLS. And Biz, how will that work in terms of our participants in Discord picking games as well?
So I'm going to do, I'm going to do a random, just a random spin probably of some capacity. So I'll just pick like three random games.
Oh, you could always take one from each of us too.
We could do it that way. So I'll think of some kind of like automated way to do it. Okay. That probably makes more sense when I'm sitting here quickly brainstorming best ways to do it. So it will probably be something like that where we're making it just a little bit more unique. So we're covering more of the MLS match days. Mm-hmm. And then two, I think it just starts to get a little monotonous when we're all picking the exact same things. Where if we're trying to actually also like, you know, gain on each other or something like that, like theoretically someone could just like, you know, I think this week we could only like make up one, I think one game, because we had like one difference.
I'm okay with that. So. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. The person that's in the lead definitely wants to keep the format the same.
I made up 2 points somehow.
Yeah, you did. Pigs had a good week this week.
I messed it up this week. Putting my faith in my own team always does that for me. Pigs.
Yeah, should I do records really quick just before we kick it?
Yeah, of course.
So with that Inter Miami draw that actually resulted in kind of what I thought was going to be the for sure win this week for everybody. But yeah, the community actually, this is like, people are going to think I'm making this up. It's 100% true. I did 2 coin flips. Heads was the top result and tails was the bottom result. And they were both going to be wins that would have been correct for the community. And they both were tails. So they ended up 0-3, which I felt kind of slimy with how that turned out. But it's the truth. But me and Dill, I actually ended up 1-2 just like Dill did as well. I had the Charlotte win as my own one.
I think I'm 0-3.
Oh, you are 0-3. Yeah. I don't know why I had you as.
I don't mind, but yeah. I'm honest.
But Dill 0-3, myself 1-2, Pixel 2-1, as he managed to get the Real Salt Lake and Charlotte winner, as we did that for the watch party, and Charlotte getting that late winner in like the 85th minute, something like that.
We were so happy.
That's how it ended up. Oh, just elated.
It's crazy to be happy after Zimmerman's getting carted off. I would never
be happy. We tried not to think about that. Kerwin Vargas was, yeah.
That's dark arts right there. So did you have the records for the for our overall records, Biz? Or no?
Oh, is that, that so
I thought that's what you were going to say. After that.
Just the dead silence of my head. Well, all right. So with that, with all those updated, so Dill is now 8-7. Pixel is now up to 7-8.
Fuck,
that's a huge comeback week.
Huge comeback.
I want to give you hope, so I stomp you out next week.
And I am sitting at 4-11. Oh, so,
all right.
Community 0-3 with theirs this week. That puts them at 5-10 overall. So they're pretty much right there with me.
Okay. All right. Well, there you have it so far, guys. Remember, join the Discord if you want to get on those predictions. It is very fun. And maybe you'll beat us. You'll beat Biz, but not me. Yes. So we have the unique picks for this week as well. So picks, why don't you go first with yours?
Yeah. All right. So I'll just go through what I have. So most of these are next week. So this is match week 8 instead of match week 9. So I have
sneaky.
Yeah. I have Vancouver beating Austin FC. It's just because that's the all. I just looked at one little slate. And then I have Cincy beating DC. And then I have LAFC beating the Earthquakes.
Okay.
Wow, this guy really metagamed the good teams.
Yeah, he did. I know. It didn't even dawn on me to do the match week 8. This guy's like big brain in us over here. That was like galaxy brain.
He's min-maxing his picks.
I'm trying to forecast 2 weeks out, and this guy's like, I'm just going to do next week.
I also misinterpreted Biz's message this morning, and I picked all games that I thought would be good games. So Columbus versus Miami. I'm going to go with Columbus because that's going to be a great match, and I think some Nancy magic over Messi will be fun to watch. San Jose and Sporting KC, I thought was going to be a mid-off, but after what San Jose did to DC, I feel like Sporting might be in some trouble here, so I'm going to go with San Jose. And then finally, Philadelphia and Atlanta in a really good Eastern Conference matchup. Friend of the channel, Benny Cage, I'm not going to break his heart. I'm going to go with Philly. I think he might physically attack me if I don't pick Philadelphia. So we are also going to go with business picks. What do you got for your three?
So for me, I had Real Salt Lake. This was match week 9.
Mm-hmm. I also did that. I also did match week 9. So.
Yeah. So not match week 8.
I'm a good guy. Yep.
But honestly, either's fine because they're all going to be in between the two podcasts anyway, so we'll be able to track them. But for me, Real Salt Lake over Toronto, I'm riding the Diego Luna train with what Salt Lake just looked like. I kind of liked that the at-home momentum too. And Salt Lake, I mean, if Salt Lake wins that, all of a sudden they're like going to be, you know, middle of the playoff hunt all of a sudden after a couple wins in a row. So that's kind of a unique and interesting spin off of that potential win. New York City over New England Revolution. I think the Revs are just counting the days until Caleb Porter's leaving. So I'm going to go with NYCFC. And then San Jose over SKC. I had the exact same game as Dill. I was super impressed with what I saw today. And SKC is clearly going through, I think, some growing pains of. Although they did actually,
Didn't they do this last week? Yeah,
they won yesterday. So
yeah, we're talking this craziness, like, and they just
that,
won.
That little, yeah, I feel like that does happen post manager dismissal a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Though, like kind of like that, like shot in the arm, and you know, kind of new ideas get to play a different way. But I think that falls flat here in a couple of weeks, being 2 weeks removed with San Jose. Doing a job at home against SKC.
I was gonna say they put two against Berkey, but Berkey broke his hand. I didn't see that until,
I didn't hear that either. So that's breaking news on Something About Soccer.
Yeah. And you just had to wait till the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Absolutely. About a goalkeeper. But it's fine. You know, we break some stuff. But all solid predictions. Me and Biz only overlap with one. So if you can't beat them, you join them. I understand. So I'm excited to see how this goes. I'm a little worried now. Pix catching up to me. Me and Pix have a friendly rivalry in Fantasy Premier League as well. And, you know. It's fun. We got to get Biz on it. He doesn't like waking up early to watch games. I get it. But we'll see. Maybe next year. I think we could open that up to everybody. I run a personal one through my own Discord over my Twitch, and we got like 35 people in their picks. It's honestly really fun. So yeah, I feel like, you know, it's different because American fantasy sports have always been draft players, and this is so different where you can just pick whoever, and it's just it's like best ball, like what you like, Biz, to an extent. So, yeah. Those are our predictions for the next watch party, as well as for our Discord prediction segment. A great episode, as always. I think, you know, we got to talk about a lot of different subjects in the MLS as we're kind of, you know, entering, you know, starting to get close to the middle portion of the season. We're still, you know, early days, seven games in, going into match week 8.
Yep,
so we're really starting to see some storylines really unfold. I am curious too. I know we didn't talk about it a ton, but who are the next managers on the hot seat now? So we'll definitely probably talk about that in the in the next 2 weeks when we do our next podcast. But yeah, guys, we appreciate you as always. Make sure to subscribe if you do enjoy the podcast. Follow us on Spotify as well if that's where you're listening. We got the Twitch channel too. Everything is linked below, so feel free to, you know, join up and show some support. We're really enjoying doing this podcast. It's a fun way for us to talk about MLS and just fully ingrain ourselves into the American game. And I'm really excited to do some Liga MX coverage in 2 weeks as well. When you hear this now, it'll be only a week, so you don't got to wait as long as we do. But Biz, before we go, any last thoughts for the people?
CONCACAF sickos unite with everything that we got going on.
I like that. And Pix, now what do you have to say? I know you'll say one thing. You're going to start eating burritos differently, but what else are you going to say?
No, I'm just super excited. I just also really want to reemphasize just the fact that the Discord is probably one of the best ways to be part of the interactive community. It's not just about the community picks.
You are.
But oftentimes we're throwing in a bit of talking about just the games that we're watching. Sometimes we're throwing in pictures of the games we're attending, even if they aren't MLS related. So if you guys are interested in all about that, I would really recommend joining the Discord and being part of the community. So
all right, well, that's a great shout. I didn't say that. Pix comes through once again at the end with beautiful words, and we will see you in this spot, I guess, in a week and a couple days for the watch party, and 2 weeks for another pod. So we'll see you guys in the next one.
Peace.